Unless you are a policy wonk, chances are you're not familiar with an online subscription news service called Politico Pro. You may not have heard of it because its annual subscription price is well over $3,000. Politico Pro was spawned by the multi-platform news organization Politico. Politico Pro's editorial director is veteran journalist Marty Cady. I sat down with him last week and asked for more detail about his organization.
Politico Pro is the paywalled offshoot of Politico, which is the Washington-based political and policy publication. We have very few readers, but they pay a lot for it. It's Politico Pro covers 15 different topics, ranging from taxes to defense to healthcare to education and technology policy. It's priced high. It's for lobbyists, regulator, Capitol Hill people, industry people who need to know every little detail about what's happening in legislation or in an agency. And we charge thousands of dollars a year. So it's for an insider audience.
It's for policy wonks.
Policy wonks who literally need our information to do their job.
How do you separate in your work politics from policy? Or do you?
You can't separate them. We like to say when we're inside the newsroom, we're the policy nerds. We know the difference between FERC and NERC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. But you can't separate the politics, whether it's a political appointee in an agency or a member of Congress. Their personal politics are motivating their policy ideas. And they all have a political motivation. So we try to understand the underpinning politics of the individuals making the decisions so that we can explain the actual substantive policy better.
What's it like doing what you do in today's Washington? And I'm thinking primarily of the Trump era.
It's dramatically different. And it's harder to get information from some sources. We had pretty good relationships with the Obama administration, not because we did them any favors with our coverage. I got my share of complaints as an editor. Mm-hmm. But we had the town wired. We knew who the decision makers and influencers were. Trump brought in, to his credit, this is what he said he'd do, brought in a lot of outsiders who did not necessarily understand the ways of Washington. They didn't understand how information is usually distributed. So it's been a challenge. We're getting there. We are starting to get dialed in on the people making the decisions because our readers want to know what the heck is going on inside the EPA or the Department of Defense or Energy Department.
We don't hear a lot of detail from this administration on many, many things, and that's mm-hmm. got to be an issue for you.
I think it's an issue for a lot of people who consume the mainstream media day to day. If you're watching any of the cable networks, you're reading some of the national media, whether you're clicking through on the Washington Post or the New York Times or your local newspapers, you're getting very vague top line ideas about what's actually happening in Washington. We're trying to dig several layers beneath that. Believe it or not, a bunch of the agencies are getting a lot of stuff done. Part of the narrative is Trump can't get anything done. He's fighting with his own members of his own party on Capitol Hill. The reality is there's a bunch of cabinet secretaries that are doing things behind the scenes. The EPA administrator is making a lot of new rules or rolling back a lot of old Obama-era rules. We just wrote about the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. They have rolled back several restrictions on for-profit colleges, for example. So stuff is happening in these agencies. It's a little under the radar because Trump sucks all the oxygen out of the room. But some of these cabinet secretaries and their political appointees are doing a lot of detailed things, rolling back Obama policies.
And yet there are an awful lot of vacancies in all of the departments there. They haven't been filling many, many posts.
It's a really big issue. And it's not the fault of Democrats in Congress blocking a bunch of nominees. Sure, there's a couple of objections there, but he's not nominating enough people. They're not vetting people. It's a problem because having an opening means things aren't getting done even to their benefit. Also, people are thinking, why would I leave a secure job in industry to be a political nominee for a very controversial president? Some people say, yes, of course I want to work for this president. He's our guy. But a lot of people are probably thinking, well, I've got a really nice salary doing something at an industry leader. Do I want to have worked for Trump's White House on my resume? Some people say yes, but a lot of people are saying they don't want to be part of this.
Does it in any way suggest a partial paralysis on government at the time, having all these empty slots?
There can be paralysis. It depends on the agency. the State Department is really struggling. I don't know if you've read many of the stories about the lack of State Department nominees, the problems. We don't have ambassadors in key places where major international events are happening. Rex Tillerson is struggling to fill these jobs. Traditional State Department people are really upset. I mean, I know some in my like my neighborhood who are career bureaucrats, and they don't know what direction they're going in.
Congress just coming back from the recess. A lot of work to be done in a very short period of time. What are you looking for in the next weeks? I think it's 50 days or so they have left?
Yeah. So September is going to be the month of chaos. They have to approve the budget and get the government funded by September 30th, or else there's a shutdown. They have to raise the debt limit, which is always a controversy, especially with a lot of Republicans who just don't want to vote to raise the debt limit, even though it always passes. We're going to have an extra supplemental appropriations bill to pay for some of the damages from Hurricane Harvey. And we don't know how many billions that's going to be, or whether there's going to be several of these worth several billion each time. Oh, and on top of that, Trump has threatened to shut down the government if he doesn't get the funding for his wall. So September is going to be a really busy month for everyone in Washington. It has potential to be a disastrous month if they don't make some deals. If the government shuts down, they're not going to blame – people won't blame the Democrats. Republicans run every branch of government.
Yeah. I mean, this is what is so amazing. His attitude toward his own party, particularly on Capitol Hill, when he needs so much, and yet he seems to be making one enemy after another.
Yeah. There's sort of a third party now. There's Trump Republicans, and then there's conventional Republicans. And there's people like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, and Kevin McCarthy, the Majority Leader. They know how to run Congress. They know how to get things done in a conventional Republican congressional majority. They don't know how to play ball with this president, and this president certainly doesn't know how to play ball with them. They couldn't get the health care vote done. Trump kept pushing it. The votes weren't there. And it'll be surprising to see if they have the votes they need to force the wall funding or to try, God forbid, tax reform, which has been years in the making and is even more complicated than health care reform. So the Democrats are basically sitting on the sidelines saying, you guys, you go ahead and work this out because you guys are already destroying each other. And it's to our benefit. If you're a Democrat, you're saying, wow, you guys go at it.
And it's particularly difficult when there doesn't seem to be a specific plan. I'm thinking of tax reform in particular. The president was in Missouri a couple of days ago and he was talking about tax reform. It kind of indicated there would be some major announcement. There wasn't. There was no detail. So this is what they've got to work with. I guess on one hand, it's a blank slate, which may be good. On the other hand, it's a blank slate.
Yeah, I mean, what we're finding out, this is not a detailed president. Obama was a wonk. He could speak fluently on a lot of the policies. Trump is a big picture president. Cut the taxes, take away some of the deductions, cut the corporate tax rate. Let's repatriate these dollars that are offshore and bring them back into the United States. Those are campaign talking points. Those aren't policies. What's difficult is when you really get down to trying tax reform. There's a reason that they don't only do it every 30 years. Mm-hmm. Every single deduction that makes our tax code thousands of pages long has a huge business advocacy behind it, whether it's the mortgage or the child tax deduction or depreciation for businesses or you name it. There's a massive lobby behind every single one of those deductions, and that's why it's going to be very difficult. Trump can't just wave a magic wand and say tax reform, and no, it's going to take months and months of negotiations with Republicans and Democrats.
You had indicated before we went on the air, and I certainly agree with you, that the average guy in the street really isn't that interested, would like lower taxes to be sure, but basically in terms of detail, not really interested.
Right, and tax reform doesn't even poll as one of the highest priorities for Republicans. Tax reform is a huge priority for sort of the permanent Republican establishment, the think tank types, the Chamber of Commerce folks. Paul Ryan has been dreaming of tax reform since he was a 20-something-year-old staffer on Capitol Hill back in the 90s. But sure, everyone would like to lower their tax rate, their personal marginal tax rate. And sure, we all want to keep the deductions that a lot of us use, like mortgage interest, or I have small children, so the child care tax deduction. But it's not a make-or-break campaign issue. The things that put Trump over the top were the immigration issue, the notion that America was in some sort of cultural decline and his presidency was going to improve it. There's not a huge movement behind tax reform unless you show up where I live and go to the business lobbyists on K Street.
He is in desperate need of a win of some sort, however. That's what I hear from the pundits anyway, and you're nodding as if you agree.
He needs a win. His only clear, concise win so far, at least if you view it through the congressional prism, and I'm an old Capitol Hill reporter, was getting Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. That's a big, permanent, conservative vote on the Supreme Court. But they have no budget. They couldn't pass any health care reform, Obamacare, repeal, replace, whatever you want to call it. They're supposed to be rolling out detailed tax reform in the coming weeks. But having covered the Bush tax cuts back in 2001, it takes months. And remember, those were just cuts in the individual marginal rates. I don't know where else you look for a major Trump win. His wins, I think, though, if I'm sort of putting my mind behind the president's thinking, are when he goes out and he engages the American people at these rallies. Trump is at his happiest and his best when he's in places like Springfield, Missouri, or Huntington, West Virginia, or places where adoring crowds cheer him and he gets all three cable networks showing how enthusiastic people do remain in a lot of this country for his presidency.
But then the next day he will deliver a prepared speech and he'll be a totally different guy and oftentimes saying totally different things.
Right. There's rally Trump and there's teleprompter Trump. And, I think that the base, such as it is, at 35% now, I think, they love rally Trump. He says things that a lot of politicians would never say. He says things that a lot of us wouldn't say in public. Teleprompter Trump is when his chief of staff, John Kelly, says, here's what you have to say. Don't screw it up.
What kind of marks do you give Kelly?
From what we're hearing, he's buttoned things up. He's a general. He's a no-nonsense guy. Mm-hmm. Staff-wise, he's fired some of the people that were either off message or leaking or not down with the mission. He's really gained control of the structure and staffing of the West Wing. It's hard to say he's controlling the president, though. There's only so much you can do. Trump is Trump, and it doesn't matter whether a four-star general is yelling at him. The rest of the staff, though, seems to be a little bit more structured, a little bit less likely to leak to the detriment of those of us in the press.
Mm-hmm. You've been, as you've indicated a moment ago, you've been around Washington for a while now. Mm-hmm. You ever seen anything like this?
Nothing. This is I've covered the Bush and the Obama presidencies, as well as multiple changes of Congress through multiple ideologies. And we've never seen anything like Trump when it comes to the way information is delivered, disseminated, twisted, spun. The way the media is treated publicly is something I've never seen. The dirty secret, which I'm happy to share with all of your listeners here, is that everyone in the Trump's White House talks to the Washington media off the record. They text, they call, they meet off the record. Trump himself, he'll go out to a rally and say, CNN is fake news. The New York Times is disgusting. You know who he calls? He calls my friends at the New York Times sometimes. He has been known to talk off the record to a lot of reporters. He comes to the back of Air Force One to chat with reporters. So privately, he engages with the media. But for the public-facing events, he realizes he gets a lot of cheers from the crowd when he bashes the media.
And as you say, he certainly does seem to feed upon it. Where, again, drawing upon your experience in Washington, where do you see this leading? There are a lot of people I could mention many things, and I wouldn't ask you to comment on the number of pundits and respected people who are questioning this man's sanity. I mean, they're using the word.
My publication is our mission is neutral. We are independent.
Sure.
We don't we didn't change our slogan as a result of Trump winning. We believe that hard-hitting, investigative truth-finding will ultimately lead politics where the American people will end up going. I've been at Politico for 10 years. I was surrounded by all the senior editors on election night, and we didn't realize he was going to win until we started seeing some of the votes. Until 10 o'clock on election night, mm-hmm. I talked to our Florida reporter, and he said, they're going to call it for Trump. He's going to win Florida. I said, okay, let's prepare for this. So I'll leave it to armchair psychiatrists and pundits who are paid to be ideological to comment on the president's, you know, mental health. That's not our job, but you know, he's fascinating to follow.
But you know, one of the things that seems to be a strategy of his, because and it has been since the beginning, is to really try to undermine the press, the media. I mean, there's not a day goes by but what he's not being critical. Fake news is certainly a part of that. What is that doing to you and your colleagues, both within your organization, your buddies outside of it?
It's a really good question. There are some of us would like to – I'd like to just be able to blow it off and say, ha-ha, that's just his politics. But there's a security problem. You know, a lot of reporters, my colleagues, have received death threats. There's been – and this is not – I'm not – this has been public because people have written about it and put it on Twitter. So I'm not sort of giving up any anything that was private. But a lot of reporters have received anti-Semitic mailings at their home addresses. Mm. So it's like, we know where you live. I don't know if these are just crazy people, not necessarily blaming anyone in the Trump world or even Trump voters for it, but the environment of the media is bad. The media is the enemy of American people is something that you know, we have to be concerned about. It might be a good one-liner in a campaign rally, but I always worry about whether someone, the wrong person, unhinged person will take that seriously and think that we the media, who are just trying to do our jobs, are the enemy of the American people. I just don't want anyone to get hurt. You can say all you want about us. We have to worry about the safety of people when this is the environment for the media.
You know, you speak of the home addresses of some of your colleagues being known, and that's where threats are coming. At the same time, the administration seems to be wanting to gather more information about all of us with regard to voter registration and partial social security numbers and that sort of thing. That, too, concerns a lot of people.
And I think that was a very controversial proposal. I don't think it's going anywhere. The Kansas Secretary of State was supposed to be as part of Trump's voter fraud commission. His name's Chris Kobach. He is a Trump favorite on issues like immigration, and he's a potential Trump cabinet member sometime in the future. He's an up-and-comer in that movement. But there are checks and balances. Courts, legislatures are there to stop the executive branch from going too far. So if you're following the Voter Fraud Commission story, even some of the reddest states like Mississippi said, you're not going to get the Social Security numbers of from our voting rolls. So I think that has been pushed down.
Yeah, he certainly has antagonized the courts and jurists over his term, hasn't he? Going back to the very beginning. I mean, they have stomped on him pretty good on some issues that were important to him.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that another big difference I would say that usually presidents have been known to criticize the Supreme Court, but there's a certain point where most members of the executive branch, past presidents, have said, I disagree, but I respect the decision of the court. Trump has been more outspoken on these things. Each of the levels of court where he's lost on the Muslim travel ban, he's been outraged and wants to blame the judge. It keeps moving its way up the ranks, and it'll be interesting to see if he doesn't win in the Supreme Court, if it ever makes it to the Supreme Court, who is he going to blame? You know, it's a Republican, it's a conservative-leaning court.
And yet the justices are people, and they're not so totally locked into the law that I don't think that something personal would creep into some of their decision making. We would like to think not, but I know they have to be just like the rest of us.
They're informed by their personal values,
right,
their faith.
Exactly.
You know, the late Antonin Scalia was a conservative Catholic. His Catholicism certainly informed his judicial opinions, and that's, you know, he's talked openly about that.
Our time is winding down, but
sure.
I just want to go back to something you said a couple of minutes ago with regard to Trump's base being at 35%. It's 35%. That leaves 65% that is not part of the base.
Right.
Why is this 35% so powerful?
Well, there's a couple reasons. Remember, he got 46% of the vote, so he's not that far off of what he got last November. It could go down further, But there's a couple of reasons the base is very strong. They believe in him still. They think that the rest of Washington, whether it's a conservative Republican leader like Paul Ryan or the most liberal members of the House like Nancy Pelosi or someone in the Senate like Chuck Schumer, they believe all those people in Washington are the problem. The establishment is the problem. The special interests are the problem. And they believe they've bought into his vision, his rhetoric. And there's also an issue with how information is consumed. There's an echo chamber. If you are a serious Trump supporter, you can curate your worldview and your information consumption around friendly media channels, whether it's Fox News or some conservative blogs, Breitbart.com. You can listen to the radio. You drive around in the day. You can pick up Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or Laura Ingraham or Mark Levin. You can fill your entire day with nothing but pro-Trump viewpoints from media outlets. You can certainly do the same if you're a liberal, of course. But I guess you're asking why is Trump's base so strong? Because they're living in a world where they can affirm their feelings about this president and his politics, and think that things like the Bob Mueller investigation into the Russia ties are fake news. They're gonna find nothing. Maybe they will find nothing. We don't know the outcome yet. But the president also just he inspires people on both Twitter and Facebook and in his rallies. And if you look at the comments that follow, it's very powerful and very passionate.
I guess for politicians too, if you can pretty much count on 35% of the vote, you only need 16 more percent to have a majority.
Yeah, and no one knows what the other 65% is. The Democrats certainly don't have a thought leader or a visionary or anyone that gets them as excited as Trump got the Republican base. And that's where Democrats are still doing a lot of soul searching. And you know, there's 20 – I think one of our stories on Politico had 20 or 24 potential Democratic presidential candidates. So it's a big field right now, and who knows who will emerge.
That's right. There were 16 or 17 in the Republican race last time. Well, and look what happened.
The most unexpected outcome.
Absolutely. Marty Cady, thank you so much for being with us. Enjoy your time in St. Louis.
It's been great to be here. Thanks for having me in your city.
Marty Cady, the editorial director for Political Pro, the online subscription news service. He was in town last week to participate in a Venture Cafe discussion about the impact of technology on politics and political coverage. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.